Last night, Governor Baker vetoed the single largest piece of climate legislation to come out of the State House in over a decade. The bill, aimed to radically reduce greenhouse gas emissions, overhaul the transportation sector, protect vulnerable environmental justice communities, and empower local cities and towns to pass greener building codes. Here with us this morning to talk about what happened and what might come next is WBUR environmental reporter Miriam Wasser. Miriam, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Bob.
So let's cut right to the chase here. We talked about this last week, how a lot of people, including the bill's main authors in the legislature, seemed pretty certain that Baker was going to sign it. So what happened?
Yeah, early on, it really seemed like a sure thing. And I think that that probably had a lot to do with the fact that much of what was in the climate bill matched a different climate plan that the Baker administration published a few weeks earlier. But as it turns out, the differences that exist apparently really do matter. And Baker said in a 5-page letter last night that while he supports many of the ideas in the bill, the legislature didn't give him enough time to send it back with amendments before the session ended, so he had no choice but to veto it.
I remember you telling us last week that Baker's plan was a little less ambitious about quickly reducing emissions. What were the other big sticking points for the governor, do you think?
Yeah. So in addition to the differences about those emission reduction goals you just mentioned, which, by the way, the governor said could backfire and cost the state a lot of money and harm, he listed a couple of other things. So he criticized the bill for not addressing climate adaptation and resilience, for failing to consider how we need to work with other states in the region to get clean energy, for being overly prescriptive about where we need to cut emissions. Basically, he thinks the state should look at reductions on a statewide level rather than target specific sectors because that gives us more flexibility. Baker also said that he thinks the bill lacked proper funding mechanisms to help environmental justice communities and that at times it used language that could confuse or undermine some of our other environmental efforts. And then finally, as predicted, Baker said he had concerns about potential changes to the building code that he believes will impact affordable housing and development. And you know, Bob, this comes after real estate and development groups really made their concerns heard about something called stretch codes.
Well, remind us what stretch codes are.
Of course, it's a really jargony term, I know. But what you need to know is that here in Massachusetts, our statewide building codes include efficiency standards. A while back, some cities and towns said that they wanted to be able to require that new buildings be even more efficient than those standards. And in response, the legislature created the stretch code, which allows them to opt into these higher standards. And what the legislature was aiming to do in this bill was update those stretch codes so that municipalities had the ability to mandate that buildings be like super green and have net zero emissions. As it turns out, many in the real estate and development world were not happy about it. And some of the people I've talked to this week have complained that this provision was, you know, too ambiguous and too ambitious in its timeline. And that, as they said, it would create a lot of uncertainty in the development world, which could impact the overall economy. And Baker actually addressed this very point yesterday in a press conference. And I just want to remind listeners before we listen to this that this came before the veto.
One of my big concerns is I've gotten a lot of incoming from a lot of folks who are in the building and home construction business who've said that certain pieces of this bill, which remember, I can't amend and send back, literally may just stop in its tracks any housing development in the Commonwealth. And that those words get my attention.
And whether it would, as he said, stop development in its tracks is definitely up for debate. And there are plenty of people out there saying that these concerns have been overblown. Because the bill actually gives the governor a lot of leeway in deciding how to implement this.
All right. So what are you hearing from environmental advocates after the veto, the people who supported the bill?
Yeah, predictably, a lot of people are disappointed. And my email inbox is full of strongly worded statements from people. For example, the president of the Conservation Law Foundation, Brett Campbell, called the veto irresponsible, and he criticized the governor for caving to, quote, special interest lobbies. Maria Belen Power of the nonprofit Green Roots called the veto shameful and said she believed it shows Baker has, quote, zero interest in advancing equity and providing much needed protections for environmental justice communities. I should also add here, Bob, that I've talked to people who say that the legislature deserves some of the blame for this veto since they got the bill to Baker at the last moments of the session. That said, some in the legislature, like the bill's lead negotiator, Senator Mike Barrett, have accused the governor's team of failing to engage with them over the last year.
All right, after all of this, what happens next?
Yeah, so earlier this week, when it started to feel more and more likely that the bill would be vetoed, leaders of the House and Senate said that they were committed to passing meaningful climate legislation and that they would refile the bill, take another vote on it, and get it back to Baker's desk as soon as possible. And though Baker says he wants another chance with the bill, there's always the chance that the legislature could override his suggestions and pass it as is. So long story short, this is not the end of the climate bill saga.
That is certainly right. We are going to hear about this again. WBUR environmental reporter Miriam Wasser, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, Bob.